Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It's Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. On today's show, Theater in the Rough is here to give us a sneak peek of their new production, Witch. We'll find out how to participate in the Southeast Alaska Food Bank's holiday drive. Juno Public Libraries will tell us about the traveling exhibit, Americans and the Holocaust. And we'll talk with the high school swim and dive teams about their Christmas tree and wreath sale. Those conversations, Sounds Wild, Savory Moment, music, and more coming up right here on Juno Afternoon. Weather for today, Audi gone. It's sunny. It's getting dark. Tonight, clear with a low of 35 and breezy. Tomorrow, Thursday, sunny, the high near 39. KTOO would like to acknowledge the Tlinédi of the Akkwan. We are on their ancestral homeland. Our broadcast studios are built on fill that was once tideland and part of what is called the Indian Village. We recognize those families who regarded the tidelands as a source of food and part of their home, who maintained smokehouses on the tidelands, who parked their boats in the harbor and gathered driftwood for fuel. The families of the Juneau Indian Village, like their ancestors, cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront. KTOO is working to lift up Thlinkit voices through the sharing of stories like these and the broadcast of the Thlinkit language. Please excuse us for our mistakes, and Gunas Chish for your patience as we learn. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and I am here with Katie Jensen, Kelsey Riker, and Donnie Gott. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being here today. You're all here from Theater in the Rough, and we're going to talk about the new production. But first, would you all just introduce yourselves? Donnie, let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Donnie. I'm Donnie Gott, and I directed Witch.
And Kelsey, how about you?
What's up? My name is Kelsey Riker, and I play Scratch in this production.
And Katie.
And my name is Katie Jensen, and I am the co-artistic director, co-founder of Theater on the Rough, and I play Elizabeth Sawyer, the so-called witch, in this production.
Well, that's very exciting. This Friday is the premiere of Witch, a new production from you guys, Theater in the Rough. It's described as funny, fast, a modern-day fable. What is it about?
Witch is about a small town, and the devil comes to town and starts making offers.
I see.
And then just crazy antics ensue from there.
How did you first hear about this play? I don't think I'm familiar with it myself.
I first heard about this play, I read an article, I think in the LA Times, and it wasn't about the play, it was about a woman's experience watching the play. And during the performance, the women in the audience were reacting, audibly reacting, laughing, gasping, and demonstratively taking part in the theater experience. And a man stood up and said, in the middle of performance, "It's just a play, folks, relax," something along those lines. And the woman was shocked that this man felt the need to shush these people in the middle of their experience of live theater. And I thought, well, I want to read that play. I think I want to do that play. So I went, I was visiting some friends in Seattle, I asked them if they'd heard of it, and they had a copy of the script, and they sent it to me, and I read it on the plane, and then I sent it to Katie and Aaron, and they'd been asking for a while what I wanted to direct, and I said, I want to do this, and they read it, and they loved it, and, well, I think they loved it. And then they said, let's do it. So here we are.
Kelsey, tell me about your character, Scratch. What's that role like?
So Scratch is indeed the devil
who comes
to town. Scratch is several hundred years old, though I may not look so on stage. Scratch is a fun little guy. There's an air of mystery about him. He's very playful. And he is chugging along, doing his job of collecting souls until he meets Elizabeth, the so-called witch, and upheaval.
Tell me about the witch, Katie.
Well, Elizabeth is actually based on a historical woman. Elizabeth Sawyer was murdered as a witch back during what was called the Burning Times in Edmonton, which is outside London. There was an original play back in the Jacobean era in 1621 where there's basically a morality play about, oh, we got rid of the witch, everything's going to be good now. It's a very complicated and long 3 to 4 hour piece, but what Jen has done is she's changed it up and centered it around the relationship between Scratch and Elizabeth. And Elizabeth is, and also Scratch's relationship to the other characters. And she wrote it and finished writing it during a time where the world changed irreparably. And Elizabeth is, she's a recluse. She keeps to herself. She's been deeply hurt and damaged in the past, and she stays in her own hut. She's quite poor. She do for herself. But the reason that because she's a recluse, and because she's not married, and because she's got a past, the townspeople label her as a witch.
I see. And so is this like a classic battle of good versus evil, or is it a lot more gray area than that?
Way more twisted than that.
Yeah, I love that.
It's a dark comedy. And, you know, one of the great things about dark comedy is it's a really great way to express and move through grief and also move through hope. And find ways through hope in those contrasts. And I think that Silverman's done a fantastic job of that. And right now we're at a razor's edge in our society, whether is there hope, is there not? And that's a question each of us has to ask themselves. And the devil can give you an easy way out, just like we are all looking for an easy way out. And some people take it and some people don't. And she doesn't.
Well, it might not be too... it may seem easy at first, but may not pay off in the end, right?
Right.
Who else is in the cast?
We have... there's Kelsey Riker. I'm going to have the director read the cast list here, which I...
Kelsey Riker plays Scratch. Ta Yamaoka plays Cuddy. Cuddy Banks. Dakota Morgan is Frank Thorny. Patrick Minnick is Sir Arthur. Katie Jensen is Elizabeth. Kate Ross plays Winifred. I added another sort of layer to this show that isn't in the original script, and it's a chorus, a three-person chorus that weaves us through the play with music and transitions us. And that chorus includes Aaron Elmore, Stacey Katas, and Salisa Thole. And they're hot. They're so good.
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm.
And then Rachel Wood is our young stage manager. We had help from Terry Kramer too. I'd be in trouble if I didn't mention that. And then Maggie Hyde was an assistant with Aaron in the costume design. And Aaron designed the set. We worked together on that, and that's it.
Would you care to read a scene?
Sure.
All right. You can go ahead and set it up and then get started whenever you're ready.
So this is the first scene between Elizabeth and Scratch.
And Scratch has already been in town collecting souls, making offers and making deals, wheeling and dealing so he can make his way to senior partner.
The devil.
Your soul, blah, 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 etc.
My soul?
Ripe for the picking.
Why mine?
Everybody says you're a witch. You're not, of course, but would you like to be?
I was warned about you.
Everybody's warned about me. Doesn't seem to make much of a difference. Mind if I sit down?
As a matter of fact, yes.
Offer me a drink. Common courtesy. Can't hurt, can it?
Nobody sits in my cabin but me.
How would you like me to muck up some people for you? How would you like revenge?
You want me to sell you my soul? Men make it sound like they're doing you a favor when what they really want is a favor done for them.
Astute. That's very astute, and I hear you. But I would say think of it more as an exchange between friends. Think of it kind of like a potluck. A potluck is what happens in the future when people don't have to worry about food. And instead of everybody just eating their own food as fast as they can find it, people get together, usually outside, usually somewhere uncomfortable and on a patio. And there are far too many bugs, and people pretend not to notice how many bugs there are. And they talk about the sunset, and they eat each other's food slowly. Over a great deal of time. And people always want to go home long before they actually do.
Oh.
Something to look forward to. You can practice with me. I bring power and reckless lack of consequence. You bring your soul.
If I potluck my soul.
Yes.
And that's a big if.
Pure hypotheticals, I understand.
What do I get?
Ah. That's the easy part. That's where it gets easy.
Okay.
You tell me. The townspeople who are cruel to you, make a list. Their cows get pox. The girls who giggle behind their hands, warts on the hands. At that point, it all really depends on you.
And what would you do with it, my soul?
What have you done with it so far?
Nothing much, I guess.
Then you won't miss it.
Nobody wakes up in the middle of the night. Nobody gets an earache or a toothache or a weird, uncanny ache that won't seem to go away.
Nobody's reported those kinds of symptoms.
Oh.
So?
Can I change my mind? If I say yes, can I change it back?
Oh, no. No, no. No take backs.
And what if I said no?
You know, people ask me this sometimes, and my sort of standard... The answer I like to give. I mean, I can get dramatic. I could be like, I tear you apart. I rip you you know. Mm. I burn your entire... Like, I can do that. But honestly, the answer I like to give is I leave. I just leave. And your entire life continues on exactly as it was. Zero change, as if I were never here. And one day, maybe next week, maybe in 10 years, maybe on your deathbed, you think to yourself, why is it that you have been so relentlessly miserable? Why is it that you never ever, not even once, had the chance to make yourself less unhappy? And at that moment, whenever it comes, you think of this. You think of this conversation, and you think, oh, I did have it. I did have the chance. I just said no.
No. Thank you.
And scene.
And scene. That was great. Oh my gosh, I was laughing over here. Very Yay. Funny and very witty. I couldn't at first picture you, Kelsey, as the devil, but well done.
Thanks, Shelley.
Great sneak peek of The Witch premiering this Friday at Theater in the Rough. So where can we go to find out showtimes, get tickets, or more information?
You can go to our website at theaterintherough.org, and you can buy tickets right at that site. And also, you can buy tickets at the door. Also, we are requiring masks inside the venue, and also the show, because it does contain some adult language, it's for mature audiences, so just we want to put that out there, make sure that they know that you don't want to bring your three-year-old, or else you might hear words at home that you didn't hear before out of your three-year-old.
Well, this sounds like a really fun production. I can tell that you guys are very into their part. And well done to you too, Katie. Great Elizabeth. Very deadpan. Very. And I'm so curious as to what's the motivation from the people who say yes to Scratch. And I think we have to go see the play to find that out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here today. Katie Jensen, Donnie Gott, and Kelsey Riker. Go see Witch Theater in the Rough starting this Friday.
Oh, and go ahead. There's a free preview that tomorrow. At 7:30.
Excellent. And this is at McPheeters Hall?
Yes,
indeed. As per usual? All right, great. Thanks so much for being here today, you guys.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thanks.
Coming up, we'll hear about the holiday drive that the Southeast Alaska Food Bank is organizing this season. But first, here's the this week's episode of Savory Moment, A Symphony of Silence.
Step in to the savory moment. Cooking instructions are full of things to do. Some are mundane, chop this, stir that, bake at 375 degrees. And others are more exciting, directives to flambé, julienne, dredge, shock, carve, bloom, and frizzle. You can imagine a recipe waving its arms like a maestro, conducting a symphony of cooking sounds. But have you ever noticed that cooking is also about not doing things? A marinade, for example, is all about not removing that venison steak from its flavorful liquid. Or when you're cooking fish, you've got to just walk away and let a good crust develop. Here's what the symphony of not doing sounds like. The symphony of not doing is the music of deepening flavors and tenderizing and mellowing. It can also tell the tale of disaster averted and tears unshed. If you've ever turned a freshly baked cake out of its pan too soon and wound up with your masterpiece in pieces, you know what I'm talking about. Not doing is a specialty ingredient. It's so special you can't buy it, not even at a gourmet kitchen store. But it's all around us all the time. Try using it as a garnish on dinner tonight. After your meal is done cooking, let things be for 10 minutes while you enjoy a seat on the couch, sip a beverage, or finish a conversation. Sit back while this finishing touch applies itself and listen to the music. Find all kinds of recipes you can wait around for at savorymoment.org. I'm Beth Shortroads. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Hands and grass. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
And support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years with 7 cafes and drive through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. I'm Shelley Delaney, and joining me now is Chris Schopp, Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Yeah, thanks for being here today. Welcome to the show. Today you want to let everyone know about the Caring is Sharing food drive happening this Saturday. But before we get to that, can you tell me a little about what the food bank is and what you do?
So the food bank has been in operation since the mid-90s. What we try to do is partner with any local 501c3 that needs help feeding their members, their organization's goal, their pantries in some cases. And then also we do a thing that a lot of food banks don't do, is actually we run pantries out of the food bank as well. And we run two public pantries every week to help feed those people who aren't served by some of those other organizations I was talking about.
What has the need been like in the past year?
So if I could go back about 3 years, I've been there a little over 3 years. And when I first started at the food bank, we would see about 60 to 90 people at our public pantry. Well, obviously COVID kind of changed all that. And during the height of COVID, we were seeing anywhere between 200 and 300 people a week. That number kind of came down this summer where we were seeing an average of about 225. But lately that number has crept up again, I think in part due to Helping Hands closing down. For example, yesterday at our Tuesday pantry, we saw 181 people out there. So our average last week was closer to about 285. So obviously there's a lot more need in the community lately.
From your perspective, what are the factors that contribute to food insecurity in Juneau and Southeast Alaska?
I think a lot of it basically has to do with the cost of living. You know, people having to pay a lot for housing, a lot for gasoline, a lot for groceries, and the salaries don't necessarily support that. So they turn to us for help in way of food, so they can then use the money they do have to pay rent, pay bills, pay electric, things like that.
And what kind of community support do you get from individuals or businesses?
So, for example, just this last month and a half, we've seen a ton of local organizations doing food drives for us. The one that I just picked up from yesterday, a fellow who lives out in the valley, he does an annual event called Dan's Haunted Garage for Halloween, and he asks for donations for people that come by to check out his Halloween setup, and he raised a little over 1,600 pounds of food for us in that alone. There are some other organizations who do monthly drives for us. St. Brendan's Episcopal Church, for one, is always asking folks for donations for us. And there's other groups who do annual drives, like the Rotary does food drives for us, or the Boy Scouts every year do drives for us as well. So we always encourage folks that are looking for something to do that they can help out, is to do a food drive at their place of business or, you know, their neighborhood, or, you know, just try to gather anything they can for us.
Well, what kind of items do you typically accept, or what do you not accept?
So we have a drop box right outside our front door, so we can take any non-perishable items. People can leave it when we're not around, or we're always there 8 to 1 Monday through Friday where folks can drop things off, including perishable items. We'll take any food items. There's always a way that we can make sure that any food item goes somewhere to somebody that needs it. Typically non-food items, it can be a little bit harder, and normally there's some other groups in town that would appreciate those kind of things.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of listeners who will want to help improve the situation, and your 26th annual Caring is Sharing food drive is happening this Saturday. How can we contribute?
So we will be at both Foodland and Super Bear IGA stores. You know, got to give a shout out to the Myers Group and the IGA stores for helping us do this every year. You know, they go out of their way to make sure that they can help us bring in as much food as we can so we can help out the community. And also First Student, who supplies the buses for the event as well. Thanks to them. But yeah, we'll be out there at the stores from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. At both Super Bear and Foodland all day on Saturday. And we're asking for any donations that folks, you know, when they do their normal shopping, they can pick up a couple extra things for us. That'd be great. Typically, you know, the non-perishable items are what we're mostly looking for. Canned fruit, canned vegetables, canned meats, pastas, spaghetti sauce, those kind of things are the most important needs. Peanut butter, things like that.
This is the 26th year for the event. Is it still going pretty strong, at least since you've been a part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. The first year that I came on board and did it, we raised a little bit over 14,000 pounds. Next year, obviously, we didn't do it live because of COVID. Year after that, we did a little over 16,000 pounds. And last year, we did a little bit over 22,000 pounds. So we're hoping to beat that record and you know, get as much as we can to resupply our shelves at the warehouse and the store out there, and you know, be able to feed people throughout the winter.
In a perfect world, I know you get a lot of support from the community, but in a perfect world, what could you do with more support?
Well, I mean, the things we always talk about, especially at our board meetings, is being sustainable for the future. And being able to make purchases that, you know, monetarily are the most frugal, so we can stretch our dollar as far as we can. So in the future, we're hoping to try to do a project where we expand a little bit with our storage space so we can buy more items in bulk and try to save some more money. Therefore, having a supply on hand so we don't either run out or run low on items, so we can satisfy all the need.
Well, I hope that you have, I hope you break your record this Saturday. It's November 19th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can bring donations to Foodland and Super Bear IGA stores. And I was just wondering, where can we find out more about the event, get details, or about anything else happening at the food bank?
So a couple things you can do. One is our website, which is just www.seafb.org. On the website, you can see the items that we need the most often. You can find out the times for our pantries. You can also see on there, we've got a community resource list where you can see all the other groups in town that do pantries. If you need help on a day that we aren't able to provide that. Also, you can call us. Our number is 789-6184. And I could still use a few more volunteers to help out at the events, too. If anybody hasn't signed up and they want to help out on Saturday, just give us a call and we'll try to fit you in.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. And one last question. Can you remind me, where are your locations? Where do we go if we are in need of your services? What would be the best way to get connected?
So again, the website, just seafb.org, it'll show you where we are on the map. Our physical location is 10020 Crazy Horse Drive in the Valley. It's down Industrial Boulevard to Crazy Horse, and then we're down on Crazy Horse across from the horse stables, if everybody knows where that is. Mm. Or you can just call 789-6184. We'll be glad to answer your questions and give you help and direct you in the right direction if we can't help.
Thank you so much, Chris, for talking with me today and sharing all this information. Best of luck with the drive this Saturday. Anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye?
Nope. I just want to thank everybody in town for their continued support for the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. It means a lot, especially since, you know, our workload's going to increase here, and we'll have to try to help out as many people as we can. Winter coming on, you know, a lot of the major agencies that depend on us are going to need the help as well. So, thanks, everybody, for, you know, supporting us through the years, supporting the Caring and Sharing Food Drive, and giving us anything you possibly can. So thank you, and thanks, Shelley, for having me on.
Yes. Ganashish, Chris, thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. When we come back, we'll hear about the traveling exhibit that looks at the history of Americans' response to the Holocaust. But right now, here's an episode of Sounds Wild. This one is called Grouse Wings. You're listening to Juno Afternoon.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Autumn colors are vivid on a brisk fall day in south central Alaska, and a spruce grouse is scratching among the fallen leaves beside a deserted back road. Spruce grouse are the most popular upland bird with hunters in Alaska, followed by willow ptarmigan. Grouse and ptarmigan are in the same family as pheasant, partridge, turkeys, and jungle fowl, the wild ancestor of our domestic chickens. Four species of grouse and three species of ptarmigan are found in Alaska. Small game hunters in Alaska have been very helpful to the biologists who manage and study grouse and ptarmigan. Hunters provide a whole wing from grouse and ptarmigan they harvest, and five or six tail feathers from grouse. This statewide wing collection program helps biologists to better understand the harvest of game birds and to estimate chick survival, the population productivity from the previous breeding season. Hunters use envelopes provided by local area fish and game offices and mail the wings and feathers. Since 2011, more than 250 hunters from Utqiagvik to Ketchikan have provided close to 9,000 wings. More information on the wing collection program is available on the Fish and Game website. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. My next guest is Andy Hirsch, Deputy Municipal Clerk at the City and Borough of Juno. Hello, Andy.
Hello.
And you were just saying that a lot of people might know you from your role at the library, right?
Yeah, I spent about 10 years as the Outreach and Senior Services Librarian, and I recently transitioned to a new role with the city, but I kind of kept one of my old projects, which is what I'm here to talk about.
Yeah, you came in to talk about the traveling exhibit Americans and the Holocaust, which is at it's on display at the Valley Library. What is it and how did it come to be in our town?
Yeah, great question. So Americans and the Holocaust is a traveling exhibit that was put together by the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum and the American Library Association. And it is based on a larger exhibit that is at the museum in D.C. There's a lot of other components to the traveling, not necessarily to the traveling exhibit, but if you have heard of the new Ken Burns documentary about U.S. and the Holocaust that just came out about a month ago, that was also kind of inspired or based on this exhibit that's at D.C. So a bunch of years ago, maybe 2019, we applied for and were awarded this exhibit. We're one of 50 libraries across the United States. And we originally were going to get it in 2020, but then something happened. And we have it now. So it is at the Valley Library now, and it will be there through December 20th.
And what would you say? So I know the exhibit examines some things like Americans' response to what they were seeing overseas during the Holocaust and what the government did or didn't do. Can you speak a little bit about some of the things it addresses?
Yeah. So this exhibit is really amazingly well done. And it really focuses on American responses to Nazism, genocide, and war. And it kind of tells the story that the Holocaust is not a Jewish story. It is not a European story or a German story, that it is a story of everybody in the world. And it's a story of people in the United States. And so it really looks at what did people have available to know, like what was reported in newspapers at the time, how about magazines or in film? So what did people have the opportunity to know, and how did that translate or not into taking action? And that is action on an individual level. There's a couple of stories of people who did things that were really amazing, but also how did that translate on an institutional level or a government level? And the answer, I mean, spoiler alert, but the answer is like not that well, right? So we have a bunch of public opinion polls that are in there, where one of the ones that really springs to mind is, you know, what did you think about Kristallnacht? What did you think about the Night of Broken Glass, where Germans and the Nazi parties came in and destroyed synagogues and Jewish businesses? And it's something like 80% of people think that that's terrible. And then the second question in the poll is like, should we admit more Jewish German refugees? And 80% of the people say no. So it's this disconnect a little bit between like what did people know and then what actions did they choose to take? And it has a lot to say about like immigration and how hard that was to get into the United States and stories about, you know, the St. Louis, which was a ship traveling and it stopped in Cuba and people weren't allowed to get off. And then it came to the U.S. and people weren't allowed to get off and it ended up sailing back to Europe and everyone died.
Oh,
so the exhibit kind of just it looks at these really important questions and asks us some really like broad theoretical questions like what's the connection between knowledge and action. Like, how do you balance humanitarian concerns and political reality? And it does that in a way by having us look and take a look at history, and specifically American history. Like, what was going on in America at the time, and how did that affect people and their thoughts and beliefs?
Based on what you've seen in the exhibit, do you think the nation was as politically divided on this as we are today on practically everything?
You know, I would say that the nation really had a lot of really different things going on. So, you know, we had segregation, we had an economic depression, we had like a bunch of events that people really focused on that were very like America-centric. And you have these, we had just kind of gotten out of World War I. You had a bunch of veterans who had issues from coming back from the front, physical, mental, like a lot of people couldn't get jobs. And people really didn't want to go to war again. And so the nation was mostly united on that until Pearl Harbor. But at no point, I think, did a majority of Americans say, you know what, we need to go do things specifically to help people who are being persecuted by the Germans. There was just a really different focus. So,
in addition to looking at how Americans responded to what they were seeing overseas during the Holocaust and the events leading up to it, as well as what was happening in the U.S. at the time, there will also be some presentations that go along with this exhibit that are focused on what was happening here in Alaska. Can you say more about those?
Oh, I would love to. So the first one's actually tomorrow, and it is called Alaskan Newspapers and the Holocaust. It is actually going to be at the APK, because that is the place where all the microfilm readers are. So what this project is, United States Holocaust Memorial Museum runs another project called History Unfolded. And what that does is it looks at what local newspapers from around the country knew what were going on about various events. So about Kristallnacht, about various legislation that was passed, about concentration camps, about Lindbergh, about, you know, the whole wide variety of different topics and kind of what was going on. The data set that they use is missing a lot of Alaskan newspapers because they're only available on microfilm at the State Library and haven't been digitized. So what we're hoping to do tomorrow is kind of two different things. The first is called a research sprint. So somebody from DC flew to Juneau and is going to be leading this. He's actually the head of the project. And you can come in anytime between 10:15 in the morning and 11:45 or 1:30 in the afternoon to 4, and we will put you on a microfilm reader and we will teach you how to look for stuff. And we are going to try to remedy the lack of Alaskan newspapers. He's also going to give a talk about the project in general and what we know and where we learn stuff and how and what did Juneau know and what did Alaskans know. And that is going to be at noon tomorrow. That's going to be at noon tomorrow, again, at the APK. And then we have two other different programs that are going to be much later in the year. On Tuesday, December 6th, Dr. David Noon, he's a history professor from UAS, is going to be doing a talk on Holocaust misinformation and denialism and the role that it's played in conspiracy theories and kind of how conspiracy theories have transformed in the 21st century. And then on the very last day that the exhibit is running, that's Tuesday, December 20th, we are doing an event called Family Stories, Juno and the Holocaust. And we're going to have four speakers from the community, Rebecca Braun, Eva Bornstein, Helena Fagan, and Cheryl Weinberg. And they're going to share their personal family connections, what was happening to parents and grandparents, stories of triumph and success, and also stories of like bitter disappointment and people not making it out. And so I really think all of these events really show kind of the different aspects of how the Holocaust has resonated through history and what it's like today. So we have personal stories, we have academic stories, and we also have like, please help us collect information for the future.
Mm. So you had a pretty big role in bringing this to Juno, and you've seen the exhibit already, I take it?
I have. I set it up, which was easy, in some ways easier and more difficult than I thought it would be.
What is important to you about revisiting Americans and Alaskans' response to the Holocaust now in 2022?
You know, I think we never want to forget. We never want to forget what happened to people and what people can do to other people and what institutions and what organizations can do to people that they think of as the other, not like me, oh, those people. And I think, you know, as humans, we kind of have a natural tendency to group with people who are like us in some way. Like, we all live in Juno, or we all attend the same thing, or we all enjoy this sport. And we have to really make an effort to not other people, to not be like, oh, those other people. Because we have this historical example, which is horrifying, of what happens when that is taken to the extreme. And it's important for people to remember, like, Germany in the 1900s was this cosmopolitan place. Like, Berlin was this artistic capital, music, theater, entertainment. And 30 years later, like 1933, Hitler starts coming to power, and it's like this super short time frame, and a lot of people at the time like would never have believed it. And when we're in the present, I just think it's so important to take a look at the past and say, okay, like this happened. How are we going to keep it from happening again?
Well said, Andy. Thank you so much. Where can we learn more about the exhibit and the events that are planned around it?
Sure. So you can learn more at the Juno Public Library website. That is www.juno.org/library. We have like a button on the front page that says Americans and the Holocaust, and it has all of the information, the dates, times, locations for all the programs, when the exhibit will be here. You can also call any of the public libraries and ask.
Thank you so much, Andy. Anything else to share before we say goodbye today?
I really think this is a really fantastic opportunity. I have worked with traveling exhibits before, and this one is the best one I've seen. It's really nice, and I think everybody should come out and take a look at it and be reminded of what happened not that long ago.
Right. Well, thank you so much again for being here today and for sharing all that. And the exhibit runs until December 20th.
It does, at the Valley Library.
All right. Thanks again, Andy.
Thank you.
Coming up, the high school swim and dive team will tell us about their annual tree and wreath sale for this holiday season. First, we have a message from the Marie Drake Planetarium. You're listening to Juno Afternoon.
This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the lunar eclipse. The early morning hours, November 8th, Juno witnessed a total lunar eclipse, and that only happens during a full moon, and when the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun are lined up, collinear. In astronomy, that's called a syzygy, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y, three Ys. And it will happen from 0 to 4 times a year. This year, it's happening twice. And the reason it doesn't happen every full moon is that the moon's orbit around the Earth is inclined at 5 degrees to the Earth's orbit around the Sun. If the moon was not inclined at 5 degrees, we'd have a lunar eclipse every full moon and a solar eclipse every new moon. Now, the lunar eclipse actually has three parts to it. The Earth's shadow is composed of an outer halo called the penumbra and a darker inner shadow called the umbra. And when the moon goes through the penumbra, it's called a penumbral eclipse. When a portion of the moon enters the umbra, it's called a partial eclipse. And when the moon totally enters the umbra, it's called a total lunar eclipse. There won't be another total lunar eclipse till 2025. And the color that the moon shows during the total lunar eclipse is the sunlight going through the Earth's atmosphere and being refracted and typically causing a red color. If the Earth was airless, the moon would totally disappear in the Earth's shadow. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. We're doing public shows again. Our schedule is on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are Chaz Van Slyke and Emily Delgado and Nadia Anderson. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Chaz and Emily, you're both captains on the high school's combined swim and dive team. Emily, how did you get into this sport?
I got into swimming through Glacier Swim Club when I was about 7 years old. And I was just trying it out, seeing how I felt, and I fell in love with it.
Are you a diver or a swimmer or both?
I am a swimmer.
And what about you, Chaz? How did you get into the sport?
I got into the sport because I needed something to do in like third grade, I think. And then shout out to Seth Case. He's the high school coach this year. And he was my coach when I was in third grade, and he's my coach now.
Wow, it's a long relationship. Are you a swimmer or diver or both?
I am a swimmer.
What do you both think is important about having swimming and diving available as an athletic option for students here in Juno? Chaz, you can go first.
I think it's very nice, and I think it's an important thing to like know also, and it's a kind of a cool thing to just be able to be good at.
How about you, Emily? Anything to add?
I think it's important, especially because of living in Southeast Alaska, just developing a comfortable relationship with the water. I think involving athletes in the pool is a very good thing to offer.
That's right. Nice. And it's a good, yeah, you're right, for safety, for the sake of safety. Today, you are here to tell us about the annual tree and wreath sale. It's the fundraiser you guys do every year. What are you trying to raise money to do, Chaz?
Well, we raise money for, like, travel costs, you know, like swimming and, like, a lot of other sports. They don't have a lot of, good charities. But ours is very nice because we get to sell Christmas trees, and a lot of people usually show up and buy some. And so it really I mean, it's like legit, like most of where our money comes from.
What kinds of trees and wreaths are you selling?
Well, we sell Douglas firs, Nordmans, and Noble, and we also sell wreaths, but all of them usually come in from like 2 to 9 feet tall.
Wow, that's a lot to wrangle.
Yeah, it is.
And you sell them out of the Fred Meyer's parking lot by the gas pumps. I think most people know exactly where you are because you're very visible from the highway. You'll be out most evenings and weekends starting from the 25th of November until when?
Until they're sold out.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
We were just talking how it's happening pretty quickly.
Oh, it sells out very quickly. So.
You know. I see. Emily, can you tell us a little bit about the online ordering option and how you do that?
Okay, yeah. So there are online options for people that want to order trees or wreaths in the comfort of their own home. You can pay with a credit card, and all you need to do is go to www.jdswimdive.org. We also offer home delivery. So if you don't necessarily want to go to the Fred Meyer's parking lot on a specific day, we can home deliver, and that's $25.
All right. Can you give us that website one more time?
www.jdswimdive.org.
Got it. Okay. In case anyone missed that, I wrote it down, and we'll try to get it up on our Juno Afternoon website. Have you both been a part of this sale before?
Yeah, I've been part of the sale all 4 years of high school season, and it's always like a fun experience. It's nice to help out and sell to the community.
Yeah. Emily, how about you? Have you been a part of it before?
Yes, I've been a part of it all 3 years so far. So, yeah.
I've seen you guys working outside in the elements, hauling these big trees. What's it like? What's the work like? Is it pretty hard?
Oh, it's horrible. I mean,
I thought you were going to say it was okay.
Yeah, we spend like the first day when we like set up before we even sell. It's just like a couple hours of just like moving trees. Like it just feels like there's no reason to, but
bunch of manual labor. Yeah. What about you, Emily? What do you think? Do you agree with Chaz?
Yeah, I think every single year that we do haul the trees, it's like pouring down rain. So it's an experience.
Builds character, right? and it's all run by you guys, your students, and you guys have some like supervisors or somebody helping you out there?
Yeah, we do. Usually we have parents like volunteer, and then they'll just like stay there and like make sure everything's going well. And yeah.
Do they help out with the hauling of trees?
No, it's mostly just the swimmers.
Well, that's I admire that. That takes some grit. But of course, you guys are swimmers and divers and athletes here, where it's pretty cold most of the time, yeah. And you're jumping into water. So I'm sure you've got what it takes. Well, thank you so much for sharing about the tree and wreath sale. I'm sure it's going to be a big success as per usual. Is there anything else that you want to add? Nadia, do you want to say anything about Chaz and Emily and the kind of students and athletes that they are?
Absolutely. I've been watching these two swim since they were young. And it's been a delight. It's been fun to watch them grow. Chaz is a graduating senior this year. Emily, we've got one more year with her. Just fantastic young people. And it's a privilege to be able to do this with them. Also, I'd like to give a shout out to the community for buying our trees each year. Like we said, we sell out every year, and we're hopeful for the same thing this year. So thank you to the people of Juneau. Thank you to Fred Meyer's for letting us use their parking lot each year, and to AML for helping us with shipping, and to you, to the radio stations. Thank you for letting us get the word out there, and to the Jack. They help us distribute and get the word out too.
Yeah. And thank you all for being here today. I hope you guys get to get a tree or wreath yourself if that's a part of your holiday celebration. I know the live ones look good and smell good and are sort of a part of the whole season. Anything else you guys want to add before you say goodbye today? Emily, I'll give you one shot to share something before we sign off.
Just a reminder that our opening day is Friday, November 25th. So that's the day after Thanksgiving. And our time slot is going to be 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Awesome. Chaz, how about you? Anything else to share?
No.
Okay. Well, best of luck. I hope you have better weather this year. Fingers crossed. And thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I saw canoes come paddling in on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. I saw canoes come paddling in on Christmas Day in the morning. And what was in the canoes, you say, on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And what was in the canoes, you say, on Christmas Day in the morning. It was aunties from my village on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. It was aunties from my village on Christmas Day in the morning. They came to love and hug on me on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. They came to love and hug on me on Christmas Day in the morning.
And one last note to share today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. St. Vincent de Paul, Salvation Army, and the Glory Hall are also combining resources to provide food for those who are struggling this Thanksgiving season. Food baskets will be prepared by volunteers and delivered this Saturday, November 19th, between 9:30 a.m. and 2 p.m. It's not too late to sign up for baskets. You can go online to SVDP, St. Vincent de Paul, juno.org. Click the events banner for Thanksgiving food baskets. So they guarantee food for those who sign up by Thursday, November 17th, that's tomorrow, and hope to honor all requests as they have for the past 2 years. Thanks so much for tuning in today. On tomorrow's Juno Afternoon, we'll have an episode of Culture Rich Conversations from Juno Black Awareness Association. Juno Afternoon is currently broadcasting Wednesday through Friday, 3 p.m. on 104.3 KTOO and 91.7 KAUK Juno Auk Bay and online at KTOO.org. Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tlingit and Haida Social Enterprises. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is produced by the KTO Arts and Culture team with help from Boston Christopher and Aaron Tripp. To listen to individual interviews, see links to anything we discussed, or to be on the show yourself, check out our website, ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. And until tomorrow, have a great Juno evening.